Welcome to Dev Discussions, the podcast where I talk to developers about intermediate and advanced development topics. My name is Sean McCool, and I'll be your host. In this episode, I'm talking with Mitchell von Weinhard, Davzi, Noxy, and Raphael Domes about Active Record and DataMapper ORMs. During parts of the live recording, we used a whiteboard. Thank you for listening. So I guess we're talking about Active Record and kind of why we feel so strongly against the use of Active Record. So I guess we start by like talking about exactly kind of what Active Record is, right? So an example of Active Record is Laravel's Eloquent, which is, you know, really actually good implementation of Active Record. But the problem is that every single object directly maps to a single row in a database table. So this is fine, but it also has the behavior of knowing how to query that table, knowing how to store itself into that table, and all these other things. And so, you know, what can happen is you set properties on the model, and then you hit save, and it stores itself down. And this is like a very data-centric approach to modeling. So what's kind of hard to do is to come up, okay, I have these domain concepts. So for this conversation, we're specifically talking about how to model an application, how to model a domain. So if your application is something like a blog or something really CRUD oriented like that, then, you know, Active Record may work well for you. It may be fine. But if you are designing something more complicated that has business rules and other things, events that trigger and fire, mm-hmm. these kinds of things, then it starts to become a problem. And I think for me, the biggest problem is the fact that if you start designing your database first. So you do the whole find the nouns exercise where you say, this car has a make, a model, a VIN number, and all these things.
Yeah, that's what I do at the minute because I'm using Eloquent. Always straight thinking about database structure first.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the wrong approach.
You know, I don't know what's right for other people, but and definitely if you merit that we're kind of coming from our own personal perspective.
Business rules.
And what works for us may not work for everyone, but with something like Doctrine, you can actually approach things very differently. So, for example, if you have these domain concepts and you know that, okay, I kind of want this object to send the message here and this object to send the message here, and then this triggers an event, and here's some listeners over here that listen to that event, you can create your tests and then code all of these things up without ever having any Doctrine or Eloquent or, you know, any Propel or any Active Record at all or any persistence mechanism at all. You just have the test, and basically they test, okay, if I say to the member factory method that I want to register a new member and I give it an email and a password, do I get a member back? Does this member contain an event called like member has joined or something like that? And then that's enough to test that the member is being created properly, and I don't have to then hit save in the database or do anything like that.
So you're saying currently with Eloquent, if I'm testing that sort of scenario, I would have to be putting in some sort of mocking of the class so that I'm not actually persisting anything to the database, or in some cases people create actual test databases to run these things on, right? So with Doctrine, does that take out the element of it affect the test actually affecting a database?
Yes, and the reason is a Doctrine object does not contain the knowledge. Okay, so let me really quick back up. There's like, so ignore that I said Doctrine object. What I really mean is an entity, a Doctrine entity.
Or just an entity in general.
It's not even
a Doctrine entity.
You know, what makes something a Doctrine entity is that you use Doctrine on it.
Yeah.
So it otherwise does not contain any new behavior. So your member class does not have a save method. It does not extend an Active Record implementation. So if you actually go into an Active Record model and you list all of the methods on it, you may think that the methods on that model are the methods that are in your class. But in actuality, they're the methods and fields that are in your class, and then all of the methods that are in the that are coming into the inheritance tree or the inheritance path, right? So you have all those save, that,
delete,
create query, new instance.
It knows about relationships. It knows about everything. How to persist through database.
So exactly. So you actually can use an instance of an Eloquent model, for example, to create more instances of that model, or to create new queries and query back.
Honestly, well, what you can do is you can have like two Eloquent models. And you can have a post Eloquent model and a members Eloquent model. And what is possible is you can persist from your post Eloquent model, you can persist to your members Eloquent model. This is all possible with Active Record because the object itself has all the knowledge to persist to the database, so you can simply change the table. But this is again very database. Like you have a very structure oriented or data oriented mindset.
Yeah.
This does not help when modeling your application, honestly. So what I would like to do, or like the thing with Doctrine is, you can just build your object. You can build your domain model. You can do whatever you want, and then you add configurations of the annotations, and it suddenly just persists to the database. It knows how to do this automatically.
Kind of.
Sort of. Yeah. Okay.
So,
yeah.
Right. So your domain model is kept separate from your service layer.
Right.
Right. So your service layer is what actually knows how to persist everything.
Yeah, sure.
So your domain model, so if you have like a member entity and that represents a member on your site, then it has all the behavior for a member. So like if the member holds collections of posts, let's just say a member holds a collection of posts, there might be a method on that member called write post,
yeah,
or who knows what. And then you pass a post object in there, and it sticks it into the collection of the member's posts. And then you can test that. Hmm?
But that's not actually persisted yet. So that's not actually in the database, but it's actually in the relationship to the class.
This is a PHP array, or an array collection.
Yeah, it's just in a collection object at this point.
Right, okay, cool.
So you have a member object. Within it, you have a collection object that has the posts for that member in this contrived example. And then you can say, okay, I added a post. Now, if I get back those members' posts, am I going to see that post that I added? And if so, then you are adding posts worked. So that's a simple test. There is no hitting the database in that context, working with models, only working in memory. Very fast, very nice, and you're not even thinking, how am I going to structure my database tables? It's not even crossing your mind. So one thing that happens is when you're using Active Record, you end up making these database tables that are nice, and they have these really nice field names and stuff like that, but once you get further away and you use a mapper, then you start caring so much less for what's happening in your database. And this actually is liberating because you might be thinking, how do I really DRY and how I really normalize my database so I'm not making anything redundant, I'm not doing anything inefficient. And that's the kind of thinking that you're doing when you're working with like an Active Record, because it's very closely tied to the database. But that actually can hide concepts. So you might actually find that level of redundancy that you're trying to avoid is actually not redundancy at all. It's actually different contexts that should be storing data differently, and you were trying to shove it all together because all the data looked the same. So if two tables have all the same exact columns, you might be thinking to yourself, this is one table. But when that's because, you know, you're working so close to the database, but when you're not messing with the database at all, you're not even thinking about, okay, this is one table. You're thinking about the context and the models. So back to the member example where you have posts. That's all tested up and that all works. The member doesn't inherit from any other class because let's just say it doesn't. The posts don't inherit from any other class. So they're plain PHP objects. And So we added the post to the member, and it's stored in a collection. And now let's say we want to start persisting this. We say, okay, it's time. We need to start building up the infrastructure. We need to build this application. It needs to be able to persist this member to the database. So what we can do is this member is an entity. Do people are people not able to see me?
No, you have to click on and then now it's.
Oh, sorry.
Right. Okay. So.
Sorry. So, what was I saying?
Persisting the member to the database.
Okay. So you have your member class, and it currently doesn't persist anything. It's just a plain object. You can start going in and adding annotations saying this member is an entity. The member maps to the table members. And we'll get back to more on the mapping in a second. And then for each of the private fields, you would add an annotation saying, okay, this ID field is what determines a member's identity. So since we can't determine a member's identity by their email, or maybe we can, maybe the email is sufficient identity, but no, actually it could never be because the email can change. So anything that can change cannot be an identifier.
Yeah, or it has to be a combination of columns.
Yeah,
it has to be a valid identity.
It has to make sense as a long-term identifier for a member. So what we do instead is we create like a UUID, and that's that member's identity. Since it's sufficiently unique, no matter if the user changes their email or password or whatever we're tracking, we'll always be able to tell this is an individual person, and all this other stuff can be changed. So we have an ID field that stores a UUID, and so we just tell Doctrine, okay, this is our ID, this is our primary key, and it's a GUID type. And then this is an array collection of posts. This is a collection of posts, rather. So we say, okay, Doctrine, this is an association. So we say, Doctrine, this is an association. The posts represent instances of the post model. So then we go into the post model. We say, okay, Doctrine with the annotations. This is an entity as well. And this post model most directly maps to the post table or member posts or whatever you want to enter. And then this is the post ID. And this is the timestamp or subject and body. And maybe the subject maps to a text field or a varchar. And maybe the body maps to a text field. You just kind of tell it what kind of data these fields are. And then once you do that, you tell Doctrine, okay, update my database schema. And it'll go and automatically migrate your database schema so that now you have a members table and now you have a posts table. And the posts table knows that they're referencing the member as a foreign key. So
like Laravel's migrations essentially become moot. You don't use that because Doctrine is basically deciding what your database structures
in a way
based on your models.
That's correct.
The entire problem with changing your schema from your entities is that when you have a complex migration, so you're changing column names or you're changing something else, you actually want to keep the data. You do have to create manual migration, otherwise the data will just be lost.
And those manual migrations are classes that look exactly like the Laravel migration classes.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an option to use.
And that's actually going to Doctrine as well.
Yeah, Doctrine has their own migrations as well, yeah. I haven't used them, though, but, like, how far can it be? So another good example between Active Record and what if we tell... So you have an invoice model, where we're just going to go with Active Record first, or Eloquent, maybe. So an invoice model, and you have a line item model. Your invoice is made out of multiple line items, and how are you going to persist it to the database? You call save on each line item. So you say, create line item, and then you have, like, 6 or 7 line items, et cetera, and you call save on them. But let's say you want to have your invoice, and your invoice is only allowed to have, like, 5 line items. How are you going to take care of this? No clue, because you have to do some weird state checking. To do on every save on your line item, you have to check the database like, hey, have I created more than 5 line items? If so, throw an exception. If not, just save it to the database. Now, what if you have, also you have to actually call save on the line item. So let's say we take just plain old classes, and you have an invoice class. And on that invoice class, you have a method called @price or @line item or something. And this method takes a description of the line item and the actual price that is. And this method creates internally inside the entity, it creates a line item class. It adds it to the line items array. And what you can actually do in this method, you can check for business rules. So you can say in this method, like, does the invoice have more than 5 line items? If so, throw an exception from that method. So inside the actual invoice class.
So you're not, because it's not persisted, you're not having to go away and count records. They're already there in memory.
And the most amazing thing also is that you can actually just persist the entire entity, the invoice entity, instead of the line item. So what you do with Doctrine is that you create the annotations in your entity, persist your invoice through the entity manager, and flush it, and everything is handle automatically for you. You don't actually have to persist a line item because you don't even want to persist a line items.
So currently in development, you probably have repositories. Are you using the repository pattern?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So repositories represent a collection of all of a specific type of thing in your application. So if you want to add something to the repository, you might instantiate a new member and pass it into that repository to help save. So with Active Record, let's say you want to instantiate a new member, add a couple posts to it, and then save it. You have to, what are you going to do with those posts between when the member is created and when the member is saved? Because you don't have, there's a good chance what you're probably doing is using auto increment IDs in this case.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You have to save the member first and then get an association with that, or like, so you get the ID and then you have to go for each post associated with that new thing. A problem. I did wonder, it kind of felt messy, so the idea you can just do that in Doctrine all within memory and then just flush it all and it does it. Oh, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, because what it actually does is you're actually, those annotations, I mean, there's ways you can do it without annotations, but I'm not even going to like pretend that I like those options. The annotations are telling Doctrine how this entity maps to other objects. And so then all you have to do is when it sees, okay, this collection is full of these post objects and that's supposed to map to this post entity, it can persist all these things accordingly, automatically. But I think that I kind of got a little bit distracted from the point that's most core to me, which is when you have Active Record, you have to code around specifically to Active Record's way of doing things. So I create a member, I save it. Then I create posts, then I reference the member's ID in the post, so I have a foreign key relationship, and I can save each of those posts. And how are you saving those posts in this situation? You're probably saving those posts into a post repository. So you have a member and a member repository and a post and a post repository. So basically, if you choose to use the repository pattern, for every single Active Record model, almost, you have a repository. Because how else are you saving it?
Mm-hmm.
And alternatively, what you might be doing is, so with Eloquent, you can say, I want to attach this model to this association, right?
Yeah.
So if there's a posts relationship in the Eloquent member model, you can say member posts and have the function posts function sync or not
yeah,
sync
it's, yeah it's
attach
yeah yeah sync you have a couple others.
So there's a number of those methods that you can use to bind things, but that's happening in real time. So and it's also happening without any source of way of controlling it. There's no real way of controlling that what's going on there. So it's kind of strangely awkward, but with like Doctrine, for example, you may not have at all a post repository. This is a bad example. You may not have an invoice line item repository at all. Mm-hmm. You only have an invoice repository, and your invoice, while it does reference other entities that are called invoice line items, there is no way to save an invoice line item without saving an invoice, right? So you specifically kind of design your systems where you cannot save an invoice line item with invoice. And what this does is, first of all, there's some amount of referential integrity, but also you can do like what Mitchell said and have rules that prevent you from adding new invoice line items to that collection. So if you're only allowed one invoice line item for a specific single product, you can't have like five line items for the same product. You could either do something clever like push the line items together. So instead of product ID 1 and quantity 1 and product ID and quantity 1, you could change it to one line item that's product ID 1 and quantity 2. So you could do something like that, or you just throw an exception saying we can't have two line items with the same product. And so you are maintaining the state, you're maintaining the business rules by not allowing the wrong thing from happening.
And all of this behavior is inside the invoice class instead of somewhere in your controller or your service layer or whatever, wherever, honestly, in your application. It's all nicely packed inside of something that is where it's supposed to be.
So you have one entry point for this line item, and all of the logic about what makes this valid can be contained in this entry point, and then you end up with like right consistency in your model.
So essentially, you can never have an invalid or corrupt invoice if you do like this. Mm. Well, it's not like a golden rule, of course, because if you still fuck it up, then you.
So, do you use value objects at all?
No, see, that's a new concept to me, and I don't really know what they do, so it'd be interesting.
So the idea of value objects is basically that in typical PHP, we're thinking a lot about primitives. We're thinking a lot about strings, regular numbers, and arrays. Mm. So these are the things that we think about in PHP. Basically, it's just strings and arrays, right? And these primitives, what they are is they hold state. But what they don't do and what they can't do is hold behavior. So in a situation in which we're relying heavily on primitives, then we're wondering to ourselves, where do I put the behavior related to this? So, for example, if you have an email address and you store it in a string, that's fine, but how do you validate the email address, right? How do you determine the email address is fine? So maybe you have an external object that's a validator, that it goes in, pulls that email, and validates that email, and then triggers something, and then you have to listen to whatever that exceptions or whatever other thing that thing is throwing to determine if it's valid. But if we just use an object called email that had the validation inside of it, then we don't have to try to shoehorn that validation behavior into other parts of the code. So instead of now having like a member validator object, we don't need any of that. Because let's say the member is just made up of a password and email, we can represent email and password through objects instead of through strings.
So in the scenario now where I'm using Active Record, I come in for a controller and I may send it off to a service, but in a basic example, I would have a validation object, and it would be specific for that type of entity. So, for example, if I'm adding a new post, I would have a post validator. I'd send in the data that I'm taking, and it would say, get the hell out of here, that's all wrong, or it would say, great. If it's great, then I go through, add it to my repository and whatnot. So what you're saying now is with Doctrine, that's... I send off just all of my data to a service, and then that the value objects will actually validate those individual fields individually.
No,
I would still validate the actual form or the request input. I would still validate that. But what we're saying is that when you instantiate a new email class, that then you're certain like there's no way there's no chance in hell that you're actually gonna have an invalid email. So when you instantiate a new password class, you're always going to have a valid password. So what this prevents is unnecessary if statements or just state checking inside your member class, for instance. What you can just do is You can have a name constructor or it's just a factory method. Like member then from email and then or something, or just member and then like new.
So if we're talking about the email object, you would maybe have a static method on the email object called from string. So you might do email :: from string and then put the email in the string there. And I just want to clarify, we're not talking about doctoring at all right now. We're only talking about value objects. There's no doctoring in this discussion. Yeah. So the idea is if you want an email object, you must create one with a valid email address. So if you do email :: from string and then you pass in a valid email, it's going to kick out to the left an email object that you can capture in a variable. So $email equals email from string, your email address.
Yeah.
If it's an invalid email, right, that constructor of that email object is going to throw an exception, invalid email exception, or it wouldn't, invalid email or whatever, email was invalid. And that way it's impossible to instantiate an email object that's not validated.
So again, you're talking now about data integrity more than anything. So you can't. What I spoke about was a very basic example of going through a controller. But you're talking about if you maybe do things within, an artisan command line that someone might build to do something, and it just makes sure the data from any angle isn't going to go in wrong. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So there are multiple levels of validation, and you're just always going to have multiple levels of validation. So validation in the persistent in the presentation layer is probably going to have to stay in the presentation layer. Like, you may do a web form validation in your controller because your web form is very unique to the presentation. It may contain multiple ideas instead of just registering a member. It may also have signing up for a newsletter or who knows how many other concepts contained together. So the presentation layer must be separated from the deeper layers of your application, and then you would handle what you have to handle at those layers. So you're still going to have form validation separate from this other stuff, but what we're really talking about now is like kind of what value objects can do for your object-oriented programming. And the idea is that if you have primitives like strings, those cannot have behavior, fundamentally cannot have behavior, which is not an object-oriented, it's not object-oriented programming because it's just data now. It's just data and it can't have behavior. And the idea of object-oriented programming is you're combining the state and the behavior together so that you can just have messages sent from object to object, right? And so getting rid of this idea of a model holding a bunch of different types of primitives frees you up in so many ways to not have all of this a different approach. Like, let's say you have an email object.
Mm-hmm.
That email object is going to collect, it's going to attract all of the behavior for the concept of what is an email. It's just all of that behavior is going to go into that object, and maybe it's in the constructor to determine what's valid. Maybe it's in other methods, like determining equality or something like that, comparing two emails. Yes, I just said that. So all of the behavior related to what an email address is gets pulled into that class, whereas if you store it in a string, where are you going to put that behavior? Are you going to just always validate that email separately with an external thing? So maybe you have 5 forms across your application that are, or maybe you're even using a command line application or something like that. Maybe you have 5 places where email addresses have to come in to your system, and then you have to validate those email addresses every single time before they can ever be put into the user or the member class. But if you have the object there, that object then is authoritative.
So let's talk about
for that validation.
Sorry. So let's just take a little bit further with value objects and doctrine. In doctrine, there's a concept called embeddables. Embeddables is just a value object that you can persist to the database. So what you basically can do is, let's say that for some reason you have a IP range or whatever. So you have an IP range value object, which consists out of 2 IP addresses. So you have 2 value objects. You have an IP address value object, and you have an IP value range value object. Now, when you yeah, right.
Technically, you probably have a subnet or something.
Or you can go fucking nuts and you can have like value objects. But let's just say, like make it a little bit simpler.
Can we do a date range? So you have a date value object and then a date range value object that's made of two date values.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just take that. So you have a date time. You instantiate two date time objects. You pass it into the date range, and then you add the date range to some entity. What you can do now is just persist the entity, and Doctrine will figure it out thanks to the annotations that you've added on the value object to how to actually persist this value object to the database, and then when you get that entity back from the database, you have this value object again. So you don't have to instantiate it anymore. You can just we're apparently gonna use the whiteboard now. So what you can do is you can have like let's say a member repository and you get back a certain member. Oh, sorry. You get back a certain member and on this member you have this date range value object and we have a whiteboard now. Awesome.
That's amazing. So what you're saying, okay, is. How does Doctrine understand what to pull from those value objects? Are you using like a string method or
basically annotations? It's just all configuration and your value object has properties and on those properties you have annotations and that is basically it. Yeah, we can see this. Man, Jesus.
Okay, so. This will actually probably be actually helpful. I think that if we look at the database structure, so if we have a member table, and the members table might just start with an ID.
You know this is backward, right? Like inverted.
Is it really? Gosh, I can't write backwards.
Is it inverted?
It's inverted.
Looks good here. I can read that.
I'm converting for our own standard.
Oh, okay. Okay. Right. Sure. Okay. Okay. So we
can just continue. let's try to get out of the video so it can.
Focus,
theoretically. Focus. All right. So that ID comes from... private, right? Pre, right? And Doctrine knows that ID will be the primary key or whatever, and you can just tell it, you know, whatever. And it'll name this based on this. So let's say we want to add an email. If we just add a string email and then annotate it as this is a string. We just tell Doctrine is this is a string. Then it'll automatically add an email column and start storing that email there. But if we want to actually email to be not a string, which we don't, we want all of our concepts to be represented by objects so that they can attract the appropriate behavior to them and not have that behavior just scattered throughout the rest of the system, adding crazy, weird complexity and just being strange and making our application like weird to understand. What we can do is create a new class called email and just tell Doctrine that this class can be embedded inside member. So now, sorry, it's, focus is bad. So you have an ID and an email private fields on that.
Oh, you have to invite Noxy, by the way. Or
okay, so yeah, we can invite Noxy.
Let's just do that first before continuing, because he.
Do I call you David?
Whatever you want, Sean. You call me.
I'm gonna call you Nancy. You're Nancy now.
Okay. So this embedded class, is that through JSON or is that creating an actual email table and some relationships?
Yes, very cool. So with the email class, can we add Noxy somehow?
I have no idea. Email? Let's just continue.
You figured out. And I switched my keyboard to Dvorak, or I mean QWERTY, so you can type in it. So this email class is just a value object, and it has annotations of its own. And it says, hi, I am an embeddable. And so it's just one annotation that says this is an embeddable object. This is not an entity. It does not have its own ID. It only exists to represent an email. And so in here, I might have a field called, it's a private field called email. And this is a primitive. This is the string that holds the email address. And what will happen here is when I run a doctoring schema update, it's going to see that, okay, we added this email field to the member, and we said that this is an embedded email object. So it will add over here a field called email underscore email. It gets the first word from this field name, and it gets the second word from this field name. And this is almost like namespacing in a database table. And a lot of people don't like this at first, but that's okay. So what ends up happening is this email actually ends up storing an email address. So like bob@dog.com, right in there next to the ID. And when you go to query them for a member, it will actually say, okay, we're looking for to create an email object. It'll actually instantiate a new email object, pull the value here, and put it into your member. So not only can you start working with objects in your entity, but you can actually start querying these objects back. And this email field will be hydrated with a value object. So what happens is, instead of just having a single class, which is like an active record class typically, that only stores primitives, and then it has these functions that handle associations and stuff like that, then you actually get a real object graph instantiated. So the member holds an email, and if you have a first and a last name, you probably have a name object. So the member holds an email object, and it holds a name object, and it might hold any number of other objects that can you can then use the behavior of those, and it's completely different from all of the manual string manipulation, checking, doing this, doing that you would have with Active Record. Now, when it comes to your database being kind of shit up by this kind of stuff, like let's say we had a name value object. Could you just mute it? Slide it to the direction that says red.
It's done.
So if we have a name object, we might have name underscore first name, name underscore last name in here. And so your field names get kind of shitty looking, but at this point in time you stop caring because you're never dealing with this anymore. This is like just outside of your world. You're only working in the object context. So you have objects that are composed of objects, and everything is object-oriented programming. It's not learning a new way of putting your objects together. So Active Record forces you to work within the Active Record context. You know, you have certain ways that relationships occur, certain ways that this and that happens, and basically,
I don't know if that's him.
It's him. That's his stupid cat picture. Yeah. So you end up with objects composed of other objects that all have easy to understand behavior, because now you don't have to go out and learn how Propel works or learn how Eloquent works. You don't have to learn how any of those things work in order to understand how your objects communicate with one another. So this is the biggest benefit. And the fact that you have to, for example, when you're using an Active Record object, the fact that you have to create a migration and then enter all the fields you need first before you can ever begin to use that object really tells us something. It really tells us this is a very data schema centric approach. This is not a behavior driven approach. This has nothing to do with behavior or what things mean for what. Hey, you're in. He's like, oh, Sean's monologuing. It'll be fine.
See you in 6 hours. Okay, so this is all very cool, but there's a limit to your love and songs. Jesus. There's a limit to the value object stuff in Doctrine. You can only go one value object deep, so you cannot have a value object that has a value object inside an entity. It won't persist it. So you can only have an entity with the value object, and that is it right now. I hope they're going to change this, but...
But you can create a hydrator that
yes.
will manually put this
yes.
together
for you. Your example of two date ranges, kind of, that would be a problem, essentially, if
well,
you had
like,
two dates.
What you can do is, inside that date range value object, you can have multiple value objects, which are stored in different properties, and then are persisted to the database. So it you can sort of like fake it. You can just sort of fake it. So yeah.
Cool.
Hi.
Hello, Noxie.
Hello.
That was his introduction. Nice.
We're talking about why we like Data Mapper, and specifically Docker in this case, since we're PHP developers and we're working with traditional relational database systems. And Doctrine seems to be like basically the best that we have at doing this right now, and why Active Record leads us to different designs than Doctrine would.
Yes, I agree. Doctrine is basically the best we got. No, it's not perfect, but it's what we got right now, so we have to work with it.
All right. So, do you have anything?
Any input, Jeroen?
Yeah, on this value object thing, or maybe something else interesting from Docker comparatively to Active Record, or
yeah, could you maybe explain why it's usually a static method which is used to instantiate an object, even though you know the from string part or the from value part? Why is that commonplace in these kinds of things?
So PHP has this peculiarity that two objects of the same type can access each other's private fields. And that's kind of weird seeming, but it's also kind of
cool.
Yeah, it's kind of useful in some situations. So if you know, you have a car and it has a private field ID, and there's no way to get this ID, just imagine that. And then another car instance could actually look into that object and get the ID as if it is that car, and it can have that private access. So this gives us an interesting option. In a lot of languages, you have method overloading.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a class that... So let's say we have a login request.
And this request is not like an HTTP request.
It's just a request to the system, say, we want to be able to log in.
Yeah, you throw into the command.
And what's important to it is an email. And a password. And so what we'll do is we'll take and we'll build this request and pass it into our system, and that's how the login will be executed. But we have a situation where we're going to build this in different ways. So one way would just be to build it from string. And then we can pass in an email and the password. And then what that's going to do is that's going to spit out, you know, our object that we can just pass into our system and have it fire off. But it's possible that we want to...
From a request.
Yeah.
From an HTTP request.
Let's say, you know, we haven't... somebody's using the login form on the website. We could do something like this.
From request.
No, it'd be make it cooler. Login, and I wouldn't call this login request, by the way. I would just call it login. So I'm kind of defeating myself here. Login using form, and then you just pass in the request object. And what the request object does is it just has all of the values of the request, like, you know, your form post values.
And this static method knows how to map your request to whatever is needed for the login class. So what you can do here is inside this constructor, inside the static method, you can instantiate the new email value object, you can instantiate the password value object, and inside this name constructor, and afterwards you know you have a valid email, password, and a valid login command class or request class.
So in this using form example, you're actually type hinting for requests. So you know that any any request you pass in, as long as it matches the type int, then it's going to be good enough for us to be able to say, this email equals request...
not a new email.
Request get email, for example. Let's just say it's like that. And I'm going to ignore all the value object stuff just to talk about native constructors.
Sure.
And so that's able to put that together. But the thing is, we can actually make the constructor for this login class private. So you can't actually construct it externally. You can only construct it from within that class. So now we have these two static methods, and each of those can actually create a new login object. So the way that method might actually look is pub static function from string, and then you have email and password, and it might say login equals new static login email, and then it sets the email from the passed in value, and then login password equals password, and then you can return. Now what's happening, this is that peculiarity where even though email and password are private fields, since we are in the login class, we have access to this object's private fields. So we can construct that object in whatever state we need, whatever state's appropriate, and return a valid instance back. But now, this login class is authoritative for how to build itself from an email and a password string, or it's authoritative for how to build itself from a request. So you can have any number of contexts that this thing can build itself out of. So these are static factory methods directly on the class that it's creating. And the reason kind of, one reason why in this situation, this is basically a DTO. It's just an object that contains data that will be used somewhere in the system. And kind of the reason for it existing is login represents its context. This is what is happening. This is what it's trying to do. It's trying to log in. And here's the necessary data for that. So these are called named constructors, and they exist because PHP does not allow method overloading. So in other languages, we could have a constructor that could take two strings. Or actually, we could have a constructor that would take an email object and a password object. Or we could have a constructor that would take a request. Or we would have any number of ways to say, like, okay, give us a new login object, and then just pass whatever we wanted to the constructor, and based on that context of that constructor, it would kick out a correct object.
So let's say you're using this sort of method, you have a command bus or like a service bus or whatever, you want to pass in the login to that bus. You can do it through your controller using from for example, but you can also use it in your console from console, that kind of thing. And then you just pass in this object into that bus, and everything will happen automatically, magically, automatically.
So without this kind of thing, you would have just the constructor that had all of the arguments that this needs, which would be email and password. That would be your only constructor. And then in the different places of your app, you would be constructing this object differently. You would have the behavior to construct this object.
Somewhere outside this class, not inside of it.
Yes, right out.
Okay. So what would be the main difference between having a public constructor which takes an email value object and a password value object, and then have a static from string function that creates those value objects and then calls self with those value objects? What would be the main difference?
The main difference is that you can make, like, with a public constructor, if you type in with the value objects, you can also make sure that you have a valid login class. But if you expect strings and you have to do some validation with those strings, For a certain types of situation in your application, you might not want to bog up your, is that the correct word? Like bog down your a public constructor. You want to do this in its own method. So that's why you would make your constructor private and not instantiable by the new keyword.
For me, it comes down to if you need to change what kind of things this can have, then the context can change individually, and so it's not going to affect other aspects of the system. So if you're pulling, if you're doing a request from string, maybe this needs to change.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, well, what you can also do is you can have like a application, you have like a new version of this, you require some code, like a 4-digit code or something. You can have a login request from string v2, which is a horrible effing name, but you can have that third parameter in there and make sure that the rest of the application still works, because it has this it has its own constructor or name constructor. And yeah, that.
When you have a single entry point, for example, then you have the capability of handling one context. It's possible to handle multiple contexts with multiple entry points.
So basically, this is to build around the the fact that PHP doesn't have method overloading for the constructor.
There's exactly that, but there's also you're making the implicit explicit here. So we can say so in one of my applications, it would literally look like I would say this and this would be the command bus execute, and I'm expecting a command here, and then I would say login using
form or request,
using form.
Oh, it's not focused like it's here anyway.
That's but okay. And I pass in the request, and then please focus.
Come on, do it.
So then you're saying bus execute login using form, and you can read this, you can tell what's happening. It's very explicit what's happening and what's expected. It's very clear. So to me, a very big aspect of this is to say new login, email, password. That's not too bad, actually. That's pretty good. It's nice as well because it's very explicit, but also it attracts that behavior for pulling information from the request rather than having that sitting inside a controller. So what if you have to log in through multiple controller fields? I know this is a little bit of a contrived example. Then you don't have to have that same behavior in multiple places. There's one place that's authoritative for that.
So would you normally put something like login from form? Would you normally pass the request object as a whole, or would you have something in between that?
I don't know what's
right for you. I have no idea.
What is a very cool thing you can do is you can have your custom request objects, your custom HTTP request objects, so you can have a login request object, and this time I do mean an HTTP login request.
Are you talking about Laravel 5?
Is this in Laravel? This you can do this in Symfony. Can you have a custom or like specific HTTP request classes in Symfony?
You extend the request object to add.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay, so let's just say you have a login request class. You have this in your action controller method because you type in it there. Mm-hmm. You can actually type in this login request class inside your using form method and make sure that it only accepts this type of request.
Conforming to that contract.
Yeah. So this is very powerful as well.
So this is what we would do. You may prefer to do it differently. I don't know, but if you're asking what's going on with the named constructors and the static factory methods, then then yeah, it's the multiple context thing that is, and the fact that it's all super explicit now. It's all conforming to language.
I like the explicitity of it. My main concern is, what if you have, for example, a user registration, and one of the business rules is the email inside when somebody registers has to be unique. So where do you check that? Because I don't think it would be part of a value object, which means it would talk to a database, which seems weird to me for a value object. But I'm not very comfortable having my user object know anything about a database, so I don't want to do it there. So how do you take care of those scenarios?
Right. So at what layer of your application must the email be unique? Must it be unique? So, for example, would you ever retire a user and still have the user's information in the database, and then you can't ever use that email again? Or is this more of a presentation layer thing? Or
it's basically what most websites would use as an identifier, I would reckon. So the email identifies you as the user.
When login. Okay, sure. So you can do it multiple ways. One of which is you can do it in UI. You can have it, but this
presentation.
Yeah, in the presentation layer. So you can show it there. That when people fill in the email, you can say, "Hey, this email is being used already." Twitter, because the other app, they check this on input. So what you can do is, like, in your presentation layer, when the user has filled in their email and they click on a different field or whatever, you send a request to your API with that email and then get back something. And this request would also execute a command. So what it would do is it would say, like, this must execute. And then email validation for uniqueness is a horrible name as well. But if, and then from request, it will get back if it's valid, yes or no, and it'll show the message if it's used already. But this is
maybe
something you want to do.
Based on my current understanding and current methods, which are always changing, and what I would probably do is just query for an existing email. See if it's there, and then if it is, throw an exception that I couldn't register the email.
Yeah.
Okay, but so you would validate it outside in, so the user object itself does not know that it has to be unique.
No. Okay. Well, as in unique.
Here's the thing. If I'm guarding the uniqueness of an email in the database, what scope could be responsible for that? Is a user supposed to know about all the emails in the entire system? At what level could this invariant be protected? Maybe the repository. So when you try to add something to a repository, it goes and verifies that there's not another user with this email. It's at some level you have to be able to protect from this rule, and it has to be a level that is large enough in scope that it actually can, because a user absolutely cannot, there's no way that a user can tell if this email is unique. It's just too small. It only knows about its own email, right?
Yeah. Well, the reason why I'm asking is, obviously you can do it outside in, but then you still, you know, the user object itself cannot guard against being created with an email that already exists. So you can say, okay, we will do it with some kind of service, maybe a domain service, an application server, somewhere, but it's always outside in. So how can we guarantee that a new developer comes on your team and he has to do some small-time registration for, I don't know, some kind of one-off action site, but the one rule is people can't register with already existing email addresses, right?
Yeah, you have to. I don't have like the good answer, because when I'm doing stuff, I'm working on best information. And
yeah.
So in this situation, I might say something like, "Your repository can handle it."
Okay.
And then you can't add it to the repository because it would just throw that, hey, this is not going to work. But, you know, obviously that kind of triggers to me, like, there probably is a better way. There's probably a missing concept here that I don't have, that I haven't figured out, that would make this a better architecture. I'm just kind of working on best guesses, but I would try to first find out at what scope this could be done in, and then operate from that scope until I could see, okay, what other additional negatives does this bring, and where do these negatives lead me in the way to form a new solution? Now, David, should we get back to Active Record or Doctrine, or talk about
things? Rafa wants to join, by the way.
David, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, man. I thought you was inviting someone. to be honest, I think I kind of need to go and do my own research on it now. It makes a lot of sense. Thank you for your time.
Okay, just wait a second. We're gonna add Ralph.
The reason I was asking about the UGID registration and the being unique, I really enjoy and like working with the value objects because it guarantees, like you've mentioned before, that whatever you work with is actually correct, right?
Exactly,
guarantees consistency. So once you start doing that, you try to model or build everything that way because it makes a lot of sense. So where I stumbled upon was like, how do I, you know, make the application aware of something that's not exactly part of its own boundary, but still I want it to be, you know, validated some way. So that's what I struggle with at the moment.
You have to ask, can I just do it through the presentation layer? And, you know, if so, whatever. But yeah. I think that you could guard that somewhere deeper.
You definitely can. You maybe have to do both, but it's also better for the user to immediately see, like, hey, this, like, I already have an account. Or what you can actually do then is focus. Is when you fill in your email, you check if it's unique or not, and then you get back the response like, hey, yes, you can use email. Hey, no, this email's already being used. What you can do is you can prompt the user like, hey. This email already exists. Is this yours? Then click here to log in. So you can actually make the user experience better. Well, but this is a totally different thing.
Yeah, like that would be redundant. That would be, you would have both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you would have both. Yeah. Okay. Hello, Rafael.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Hey, man.
We started having a conversation about Active Record. Let's talk about programming conversation. Welcome, Rafael.
Thank you. Oh, actually, this concept that Noxy was talking about is also something that I got in and I was discussing with him. And what I was wondering is, it seems to me, if we're talking about, you know, domain-driven and all that, the user is not actually the one who detains that information about email being unique or not. Whenever I go and I sign up for, you know, if I'm walking into a concert, I don't care if whatever I'm handing them is unique or not. Yeah. It's the people who are letting me in that kind of have that concern.
Yeah,
exactly. So
that kind of, you know, bounces back into maybe this should be done by a listener or something like that.
Yeah, well, what you can maybe have is you can have like a specific object that, like, let's just call it a bouncer for this concert mindset. Or a scenario. You have a bouncer object that you use to first check if the user is valid, yes or no, and that this bouncer checks in the database if it's unique or not, and then throws an exception if the email is being used already.
Rafael, did you hear what we were talking about repositories?
Which is that was my second point I wanted to dump into. You have to ask yourself where in the business, I guess, this makes a difference. Because there is the database limitation where you don't want two unique users, and then there is the business level where, yeah, I don't want that user to, you know, have two separate accounts on the same email and that kind of stuff. And I think that kind of gives you a hint whether you want this to be a hard check in the repository that just throws an exception, or if this is part of whatever command is executing the administration and saying, hey, you know what, I have to validate this email before I let this command go through, and it failed, and then the user has to react. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Because you're going to have different levels of validation, and they're going to have different needs. Because, for example, it's not an invalid email address if it exists twice. That's not what makes it invalid. The email address is still valid, but that may be not an email address that we can use for a new user. So we have to find the context at which that rule has to be enforced.
Yes, which is why you wouldn't want to validate it on the value object itself, because it's an invalid email. The only thing the value object cares about, am I a valid email? Yes, no. And if it's a valid email, then it's a value object.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that goes with the concert hall thing I said. I don't care if the number on my ticket is unique to me. I just care if I have a valid ticket to get in or not. And whoever is controlling your entry to that concert, he wants to know, hey, you didn't just copy someone else's ticket and you're trying to get in with their ticket.
Yeah, there's a couple examples in that scenario. So you have you can't check in with a ticket more than once. You cannot even create a ticket that has the same identification more than once. So there's multiple levels at where the separate rules must be enforced, and they may be the same rule in some way of looking at it, but in different contexts. Because it's in different contexts means that they're different rules fundamentally.
And this also prevents you from a one validation rules them all. Like instead of just having one use validation check in the beginning of your controller or your request or wherever, you have it. You have the validation exclude where it's enough just.
Who's listening or watching or whatever actually wants more information on this idea of enforcing your domain consistency, then I would watch the Unbreakable Domain Models video by Matthias Faross, and he actually covers, he goes through a whole example of how can we make sure that we have consistency, like, all the time. It'll focus eventually.
There it is.
And also, I can't write, but I can type really well, I promise.
And very fast, I notice.
The other thing I really, to that aspect, I think Ross's take on the commons, where the common carries the validation rules that need to be applied, I think that kind of also plays a hand in this, because validating the unique email is not part of validating the user, but it's part of validating the act of it.
What?
I didn't hear.
No.
They're talking about food. What's the order?
Oh, okay.
Denk je zelf veilig, maar je bent nog bezig.
Ik ben bezig.
Cool. Chromecast?
Yes, it's lunchtime.
Sorry.
Fat Friday?
Are you going to order, like, is it Fat Friday?
They already had it. I skipped it for you guys, just so you know.
That's nice.
I just skipped lunch because I wanted to join in, you see? That's how good I am to you guys.
Insights about active record verbal for, so something like Propel or Doctrine 1 versus Doctrine 2? What's a good fit for what situation?
Well, the active record experience I have comes mostly from Rails. I had a few, small projects written in Rails. And while it's not per se something evil, it doesn't carry that on its own. It opens the doors to a few things that really, it gives you the ability to have a user in the view, for example, and trigger queries from that object. That, to me, is my biggest concern with Active Record, is it's the abuse of it, not the presence of it.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about being able to maintain consistency by distributing the appropriate logic into different objects, the fact that active record objects can do anything ever basically consistency boundaries that we've been trying to design And so that, you know, maybe you can't even actually have real consistency boundaries when using Active Record.
Yeah, I think it couples your models to the persistence, which I think is usual if you're just developing a website and not really worrying about all of this. But the moment that you start thinking about, you know, service architecture and separating, you know, all of these concerns, you now have a model that's completely coupled to its persistence, right?
Well, I think Active Record promotes bad design in the same way that a standard implementation of Doctrine promotes bad design. If you can change any arbitrary value in a database without having to go through business rules, let's say we have a product and we want to pay for it. So we set the price to some kind of, you know, money value or whatever, but we don't set the status to is paid. Then you have like a database role or an object in your system that doesn't make sense at all. But both Active Record and Doctrine, the vault implementation, don't really care if the object is invalid. It just says, okay, you just want to change the price. You don't want to change the status of the object. That's fine by me. Let's do this. Yeah. So you bypass all the boundaries, the business rules you set up to protect your application from disorder invariance. And yeah, that's why I think both Active Records is a bad design pattern. And the default implementation of Doctrine promotes that as well with using the setter's implementation.
So it all comes back to actual good design, honestly. Like, you can do harm with Active Record, you can do harm with anything. You can even do harm with raw SQL queries inside your views if you wanted to do that. But it just comes down to what you want to protect.
To me, the distinction kind of what you're saying, Jurgen, comes between CRUD and modeling. So with CRUD, you have basically just state. You just vomit state in the database, and then you have all these places where you're like sticking your fingers and painting with the whatever's in the database, and all the behavior and the logic for that kind of thing is kind of coming from the outside. It's like a feature envy type situation. And in a lot of situations, CRUD is definitely the right way to go because that's what you're doing. You're just doing CRUD interactions. But if when it comes down to a modeling, the point of modeling is to create a system that can that represents all of the states that are supposed to be represented and keep invalid states from existing at all. So maintain that consistency always. So if you have a system, for example, like Active Record, that allows you to do anything you want at any point in time, that fundamentally goes against the entire concept of creating a model for maintaining consistency. And I have to ask, can you think of a way, and maybe I'm just, you know, being ridiculous, can you think of a way that you can actually guard those business rules with Active Record? Because I can't. I can see how at any point in time with an Eloquent model, for example, not to dis Eloquent or Propel or Doctrine 1 or any other Active Record, those tools exist as an pattern implementation, and I'm not at any point in time talking about those tools. Those tools, I'm sure, have a place where they are perfect and great, but what I'm talking about is when you need to actually make sure that the state of things is correct, and a junior developer or somebody or yourself, because you know maybe you had to fix something right now in 15 minutes for a demonstration, and then later you're going to go implement it correctly or something. Is there a way that you can actually protect your invariance with Active Record?
Yeah, so that was actually the point I wanted to make. When Nafi said that Doctrine does not prevent you from doing that, it also gives you that chance to violate these rules. I think that's a point. Doctrine doesn't care, and it should be able to allow you to do anything. However, Doctrine does have the hooks where you can come in and prevent those boundaries. So you can implement good design on top of it. And I have the same feeling that you have, that if you have an Active Record element in your hand, an object in your hand, there's not much you can do unless you have, I don't know, life cycle events or whatever where you can hold the database side under control if something happens outside your scope. But I don't see a simple choice But obviously, I don't have that much experience with things like Eloquent, for example, so I wouldn't know.
Well, like, there are other hooks? I don't think so. Like, there are
To me, that's just distributing the logic into another place.
Yeah.
It's not any different. It's just separating things out and saying, okay, we're going to maintain model consistency by somehow maintaining the database consistency, and that to me doesn't necessarily make sense because what's in memory is what's important. The database and the storage and everything, that's an implementation detail. For all we know, all of this stuff, your repository is constantly held in memory somewhere. It shouldn't matter to the model, you know, how that's being stored or whatever. To me, it's the model that must maintain consistency, and if you persist some of the model to the database, well, that must be by nature consistent because it was part of a consistent model, unless there's something wrong with your persistence layer, which, you know, that's outside the scope of this conversation.
Yeah, I'm currently porting. Basically, what we had is we had a prototype kind of application where pretty much we were just doing CRUD, right? And now we're implementing new features, new layers of functionality on this as a preview kind of release, hopefully leading to a complete rewrite in a few months. But with these changes, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring in, okay, common bus and these domain concepts. And you can clearly tell the difference between what you see there and what you see with the regular CRUD controllers where, you know, things are just going everywhere. And then you go look at the common bus, you see there's a very clear distinction of, I could actually take this thing, and it has nothing to do with my persistence. This is data that's coming in, and my persistence can literally come in and hook up in here. Sure, most of the entities we're throwing around are still doctrine entities, but the actual calls to any kind of persistence are only done by the commons and the services behind it.
Right. Yeah. No. The only thing I can say to you right now is I agree. But you're right.
Yeah. Fundamentally, Active Record to me, not flawed, but it.
It's fine.
It suggests that you're designing from a data schema type first situation, and what we're trying to do mostly is design from a model first.
I think it has history. That's the thing, right? I mean, it was developed in a time where these concerns were not part of what we're thinking.
Right.
It was a different mindset. I mean, look at all the stuff that we have dropped along the way that you know don't make sense anymore. I mean, I remember the days where singletons were the best thing on earth. Now everyone's like, "Oh, singletons!" No,
they still are.
I think.
What are you talking about?
We're all about the multiton.
Right, but that's the thing. Languages, design, code, all of this—it kind of evolves, and we have to keep up with it. And I think Active Record is pretty much attached to a mindset that was a very simplified version of MVC and which are concepts which are perfectly valid. They're still perfectly usable. But as we evolve the way we work with these things, to work better as a team and to provide better services to the business, we kind of change, right? This is where this whole domain-driven stuff is coming from, where all the model is coming from. It's ideas that make it easier for us to attach what we're doing to what the business wants.
Right.
And I think Active Record is kind of like, being left behind.
Why is Mitchell writing event sourcing on the board?
Event sourcing is the future.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
So alternatively, instead of storing state into the database, you could just record the events that occur. That's an option. That's probably outside of the scope of this conversation.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, let's just not get into that.
Active Record is a modeling of your persistence, but when you model persistence and the storage mechanisms, you're inherently choosing situations which are suboptimal for modeling your domain. So in the context that I know that the people involved in this conversation exist within, our domain modeling is very important to us because this is our job, this is what we do. The same stuff that we do, You know, other people may not do that. And in those situations, active record may be a very good fit. Modeling from about your schema and you know, kind of going data schema first may be a very good fit. We can't speak to that. But if we're making applications that are large and have a lot of business logic and business rules, then it becomes very unmaintainable to just have all of that behavior distributed everywhere and to not be able to guard the business rules and really ensure that they're being followed all the time. Because if you ever have a problem and you end up with your data and stuff being in an inaccurate state, it's probably causing exceptions or 500 errors on your web, stuff like that. And of course, that's the stuff that you directly want to avoid. And you could just say, okay, just test better, write your code better, do all these things better, but you, in a way, in the first place, to where theoretically it can't hit that invalid state. It's just, it's not possible. So I think that if we try to make those business rules and enforce them explicitly within our model, then we can avoid a lot of trouble in the first place and actually have the opportunity not completely just create bugs all the time.
I think every developer ever who ever had an issue where he looked in the database and saw database fields that made no sense at all, like by example, somebody ordered something, paid for it, but it wasn't set in the status paid. Whenever you come across that kind of thing, which is horrible to debug, then this is probably for you. And I think 99% of the developers out there have these kinds of problems.
Honestly, like, wait. It's the future.
Which fan sourcing would help with, but that's a different discussion.
Well, so when you have like a certain amount of complexity, you just don't want to, you want to protect your application from that, or you want to protect yourself, honestly, from that, because you don't want to be like sitting in the office at Friday night at 10 p.m., trying to figure out who paid this stuff or not. Like, you know, you just don't want to do that. So event sourcing, yeah.
So I don't know if we can come up with more to talk about regarding Active Record.
Me neither.
Rafael, I could ask you a question. Actually, Jeroen also, because you guys have been using Docker longer than I have, both of you. How do you like to handle data migration? So if you are, for example, you have a name field, and it has your first and last name, and what if you want to separate it into a first and last name field separately? How would you handle that? How would you go about that?
Okay, so I've been handling that using the data migrations extension, because basically what you have in each of the migrations are overall just a dump of the SQL that's going to change the database into the new format. But since you have control of that, what I usually do is I grab all the data from the database, store it in an array, depending on size, obviously, make the change, and then repopulate the database back with the information I had. So that migration kind of does the SQL change, but it also has the knowledge to go in and actively change that data into something else.
Yeah, we've been doing the same, except since I've started a little bit doing domain-driven development, just a little bit, I've been beginning to do it differently. I've been trying to write a command that basically makes the objects the way they should be. So what we basically do is the same, is we get all the data from the database, then run it through the domain objects, which make sure that they're valid. So even if your migration would result in an invalid state, then you would know it beforehand instead of afterwards, because else you're basically just doing like raw SQL just basically on the database, but then in code, right? So you want to enforce those rules, business rules as well. So if you have some old data which maybe is not consistent with the way you've set up the new rules, then you can know that beforehand instead of, you know, having to figure it out once something breaks. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, so one thing I would mention to anybody who's like watching, that the embeddables we talked about earlier, the way you can embed value objects as value, using the embedded value pattern, which is basically just to take the value from that value object and store it directly as a field in the database, pull that out and my object. That is new to Doctrine 2.5, I believe. Is that right?
2.5? Yeah, 2.5. Yeah, it's not stable yet, but...
But we use it, and so...
Yeah, like everybody in the grandma is using it, so you can just use...
I think the builds are failing right now, actually.
Yes, they are.
But, like, who cares, right? Not cares. It's your production application. Who cares? Can we think of anything else?
Well, could somebody really quick describe proxy objects so that we kind of cover most of the material before we're done?
In the sense of Doctrine?
Yeah.
So basically what Doctrine does is instead of you having direct access to the object mapping to the database, right, it has a layer in between. So that even though you're doing all these mutations or changes to your object, it doesn't commit them to the database until it's actually necessary. So you work with, like, in-between objects.
Are you sure? Because as far as I know, the concept of proxy objects in Doctrine is basically there for lazy loading.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about unit of work.
Yeah, the idea behind proxy objects is whenever you grab something from the database, it has relations to, I don't know, 5 different objects. Instead of also grabbing those 5 objects, it basically what it does is it creates a proxy object which extends your object and sets the ID. So essentially, in most operations, you just need the ID to then go do something else. That information is there. If in case you do need more information, let's say you want to print the name of all of those relations, all the setters are overwritten with a __ load method, which is kind of pretty much the only reason why PHP should use getters and setters, given that concept, which then will trigger the load from the database and load that at the last possible minute, which is good on one end, but it's also bad on the other, because then you're triggering a whole bunch of isolated queries that are triggering, you know, you can easily get up to hundreds of queries if you're not careful about it.
But you can force eager loading, though. So if
you can force eager loading, exactly. But you need to be aware of that. Most people are not aware of eager loading and joins and things like that, which will then make sure that all of that data is brought down at once, not in different pieces. And all of a sudden, you know, you're like, what's going on? And you look at the little symphony bar, and
it's like
you're
5,000 queries. Yeah, so eager loading is the way to solve the N+1 problem, right?
This is not a problem of Doctrine per se. This is an ORM always problem, right?
Just a database query problem. So the proxy objects, from what you're saying, you have this member entity, and it contains a number of, let's say, blog posts, and you don't want to pull in necessarily those blog posts on that member. You don't know if you're going to use them. Who knows what's going to happen? So we're just going to say we're not going to load those at all. And the way that Doctrine is going to do lazy loading is that it's going to create a new object that inherits from your member class. And then where you would have those collections of posts, it's going to have a different type of object that when you try to access that collection will actually then go out and query for those posts.
Well, it queries on the individual post, right? So it'll have
a collection. Like Rafael said.
Yeah, it'll have a collection of proxy posts. And then on the getters within that, so for example, when you say get name of a post, that method will internally be mapped to __ load, and then parent get name or whatever, and that load method is basically going to trigger Doctrine to go and find that in the database and populate that object. So at the end, you still have a proxy object, but it will be initialized with the data or not.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a good distinction.
Right. So David, just to get back to you, because the last time you talked was like, I don't know, 45 minutes ago. We've discussed a lot about Doctrine now, comparatively to Active Record. So, and you have you ever used Doctrine before, David?
No, never. A friend of mine's actually, who lives very close to me, has been raving on about it, and I'm seeing a lot about it. And The more and more complex applications I'm building, I'm kind of coming up across these problems that you're all saying that Doctrine tends to solve, the value object issue, the fact that I don't have to go through and save every individual object individually. So, I understand the concepts of it, but I've got to go and put it into practice and give it a go. But no, I really appreciate the time you guys have taken out to talk about it. It's invaluable.
All right. Well, you just answered my other question, so.
So, I probably should get back to work. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
It's Friday.
So maybe we get together and talk about something else soon, because I really like getting you guys' input and everything.
Event sourcing?
Okay.
Well, let's talk about event sourcing.
People want to talk about event sourcing. None of us are experts on event sourcing, but we are actively studying it.
Yeah.
So we can have a conversation and.
Right.
If somebody like Matthias would be up for having a conversation about event sourcing, then
that would be great.
We should just like not be involved. So he knows what he's doing. We're just reading and studying and working on it. So yeah, like in this conversation, like every other conversation, we're working on best knowledge, not complete or perfect knowledge. We're constantly trying to figure it out. So don't think that any of this is truth. And thanks very much, you guys, for your time, Jeroen, Raphael, David.
Thank you. That's pretty much it for me as well. Maybe next week we can have another hangout on event sourcing. So, or like discuss the ideas and what, because like we know the concept, but we've never used it in practice. So
we will
maybe soon in the future. So that's it for today. Later.
Have a good day, guys. Thank you very much,
everybody.